Okay, today we have another bump off series. So there's a series called Spine Tinglers. Unfortunately, I didn't get my hands on any Spine Tinglers, so I wasn't able to read one. But I've got the full list here, so we're going to give it a go. This is a long ass series. It's weird because, you know, a lot of these other ones, like Are You Afraid of the Dark or whatever, I'm like, I kind of get why they're not super common in the thrift stores and everything. I mean, like, okay, just to like give you some insight into this whole thing, like it started by I started buying like Goosebumps and knockoffs at the thrift store, and like Goosebumps show up fairly frequently at the thrift store. I mean, like the same ones show up a lot, but it makes sense because like there are so fucking many of them and there are so many copies. Like it had such wide distribution, it's bound to show up. And then, you know, you got some like outliers like The Snowman by R.L. Stein or The Strange Matter book or whatever. But then you don't really see a lot of these other series. And I guess it's probably because most people didn't read them, because most people probably were like satisfied with Goosebumps or something, would be my guess. But you just don't see them around as much. But it's kind of shocking when you look at how many? Okay, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. There's like 30 in the series. You know what I mean? This is not an insignificant number of books. I mean, right, that's like more than Sue Grafton's series. And that's like a series known for having a shitload of books in it. So it's just kind of a weird thing. Like, it's almost, I think, children's books, especially series, especially horror series, were books that were in the 90s, even at the time of their release, seen as kind of ephemeral. You know what I mean? Like, you would read them and then probably not read them again. That kind of thing, which is, I think, what books are becoming now, is a bit more ephemeral, a bit more of like a, you know, fart in the wind or something. Title of my autobiography. All right, let's get to it. The Substitute Creature. Oh, and by the way, it ran from March 1995 was the first one to February 98. So it was like almost 3 years. 10 a year. I mean, that's an insane publication schedule. Like, you know, one of these writers must have written like the publication schedule at Parachute Press, you know? Although I guess this one and most of the bump off series were written by more than one person. I think that's how most of these series managed to keep that pace. Okay. The Substitute Creature. Elementary students Jace Morgan and Abram Saib begin to suspect their new substitute teacher, Mr. Hiss, is an extraterrestrial after a series of bizarre events, including him spreading blood on his hands and face in the men's room. This one goes kind of hard right away. Blood all over his hands and face? I mean, I'm betting it's not actually blood. It probably turns out to be some kind of weird cream for a skin condition that a substitute teacher would have, because subs are disgusting mongrels. Billy Baker's dog won't stay buried. When Billy's dog bites a nasty neighbor and is put down in retaliation, Billy firmly believes his pet isn't gone for good, and indeed, the animal returns from the grave with an army of undead canine companions. I mean, having been on the other side of this equation, what was the nasty neighbor doing exactly? It's kind of important. I was bitten by a dog for doing something so nasty as jogging on a paved path in a public park. Pete's jogging on a paved path in a public park is like Billy Baker's dog won't stay buried. Also, is a dog biting a nasty neighbor like a reasonable level of retaliation? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I love the idea of this sort of vigilante justice coming down on people who are just kind of unpleasant. It's like Batman, you know, Batman beats the shit out of a mass murderer. Okay, I can dig that. But if he was breaking some guy's body into a million shards because the dude was sort of a dick at work, that might not sit quite as well. My teacher's a bug. Ryan and his family moved to Texas for his father's new job, and when he's put on a new allergy medication, Ryan becomes able to see his teachers for what they really are, overgrown insects plotting a total takeover. Oh my Christ, this sounds like something that would come out today, except you'd gain this superpower by not taking, say, a vaccine that has saved millions of lives. Still waiting to regret those shots, everybody. I've been told I would shrivel up and die by now, and I'm still alive. Maybe that's the threat? Maybe people saw me and were like, you know, this whole COVID thing could be your ticket out of this mess, provided you don't get a vaccine. Where have all the parents gone? When the parents of Broxton begin to go missing, some kids and teenagers react by having fun. Others set out to uncover the truth and discover a secret alien invasion going on. I feel like a mix of fun and truth uncovering would be the most appropriate thing. I mean, on one hand, all the adults disappearing is concerning. On the other, I could probably solve the mystery while also eating a lot of candy and staying out super late and playing video games nonstop for a couple days. Check it out and die. Charlie and Dustin are initially happy that the new school librarian has been stocking the library with horror stories, but soon discover that their fellow students are vanishing and the stories are coming to life. I fail to see how this is a librarian's fault. By the by, there are only two books I remember checking out from the school library. One was about monsters, and the other was called Unreal and featured a scary story about a skeleton who haunted an outhouse. This is just a hint for you school librarians, like you elementary and middle school librarians out there, about what kind of shit should be on your shelves. But you know what? If like the librarian really is doing stuff, it's kind of like blowing up your own spot by having horror stories on the shelves. That would be like if I worked at the library and stocked it with like books about guys who were kind of half-assing their job. Simon says, croak. Alexander has moved to a new town and a new school and begins to receive messages from the deceased former owner of the desk in his classroom. This sounds like a half-baked version of I have a Canadian girlfriend. She's a model, which is why the picture I have of her is cut out of this Sears catalog. Instead of that, in this book we've got, I have a girlfriend. She's a ghost, but she's like a super hot ghost. Snow day. A group of students face terror when their school bus is caught in a raging snowstorm and they're forced to seek shelter at a sinister-looking abandoned farm. You know what? Honestly, beats the shit out of being in school. I maintain that nothing is worse than school. One time in middle school, we were bussed out to a farm and we picked carrots. It was raining and it was fucking freezing and everyone was falling down in the mud and I had a broken arm at the time and was basically useless. I remember this school day fondly because it was better than being in school. Don't go to the principal's office. Mr. Amstead is the new principal at Crosswell Elementary School, and Richard and Ted begin to suspect something is up when the students sent to his office undergo a complete personality change, possibly from being lobotomized. You know, the possibly is a pretty important word here. If the guy is just convincing children to make, good decisions, like he's just making good points, I fail to see the problem here. But if he's performing brain surgery in his office, okay, that's probably kind of an overreach on the part of a principal. I mean, although I think about this, would you ever consider a lobotomy if you could be assured that you would be 10 times happier? Like if every time someone did it, they reported being 10 times happier, objectively, just across the board. Would a lobotomy be something you would consider from time to time? Step on a crack. The sidewalks are cracking, and there are strange fragrances and mysterious growls in the air, and only one kid can find evidence that any of this is out of the ordinary. Only one kid. One kid comes out of retirement. Ghost McGee, kid detective, kid paranormal detective. I always swore that last job would be my last one. The one where Nate the Great died before he could eat his pancakes. The dead kid did it. Dunning comes face to face with a pranking ghost who's framing him for the ghost's actions. Now this seems like core ghost stuff. Doing bad things is like how you spend your first year of ghosting, and then you advance to not only doing the bad things, but getting others who are alive to take the blame for them, thereby kind of doubling your ghosting effectiveness. You know, I kind of miss the days when ghosting wasn't just about efficiency, but at the same time, I don't know, there's something to be said for it. Fly by night. The crows in town are acting strangely, and Ty believes old Mrs. Crow may know something about it. How would a crow have to behave to make you suspect it was behaving strangely? Like hanging upside down from tree branches or something, drooling blood, smoking? As in smoke coming out of its body, not smoking a cigarette. I could kind of believe a crow could be taught to smoke cigarettes. Would smoking be a problem for wild animals who are almost certainly going to die in some violent way as opposed to living to a ripe old age anyway? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like wild animals all die in the equivalent of their early 20s. I don't know. Killer computer. Jenny and her younger brother Brian, hey Brian, encounter a monstrous creature that wants to escape from cyberspace and into the real world, bringing its deadly games with it. Jesus Christ, here we go again. I wonder if modern horror writers are as obsessed with this idea as writers were back in the day. Like maybe growing up with video games has taught my generation that they're fine. New generations of video games are annoying and stupid and not as cool as ours, but they're not like dangerous. You know what I mean? Ryu from Ninja Gaiden's not going to come out and kick my ass. Pet store. Amber, what a title. Amber and her family move to a new town, but Amber soon finds out the dogs are really in charge while the humans are their pets. This is the sort of thing you should really look into before you move somewhere. Maybe look at Google Streets and see if there are dogs walking on their hind legs and wearing little uniforms and stuff. Actually, now that I say it, if I saw that, I would probably put all my shit on the curb and move there immediately. I'd take the risk. I have to be the pet? All right. You know. Blood Red 8 Ball. Craig gets pulled into a pool-themed virtual reality game where he soon finds that the 8 ball isn't like normal ones. It's evil. No! Another video game virtual reality gone wrong, huh? And this is in a pool game like billiards? No kids liked playing pool on the Nintendo. That was something your dad had or something. The cover would just have some babe on it, but then you put the game in and it just looks like you're interacting with a geometry textbook. Escape from the Haunted Museum. Trapped in a museum overnight, Tony and his friends discover that the exhibits come to life during the late hours. You know, if I curated a museum, do you think I'd be able to keep my job if I put up a glass case with crazy-looking laser guns in it that said, in case of exhibits coming to life, break glass? Like, if that was the only thing in the whole museum that was just, you know, a big gag, do you think I could get away with that? Like, if I... Maybe that's the kind of thing you have to work there for 10 years and build up a reputation, and then they're like, all right, you can do it. We wish you a scary Christmas. A pair of kids discover that their neighbors are holding an amnesiac Santa Claus in their home. You know, the percentage of Christmas narratives where Santa is totally incompetent is amazing. He's a supernatural creature who's been doing this for centuries, and yet he's so bumbling that the best option to replace him is Tim Allen. The Monster Channel. Charlie discovers a spooky old television in the attic of his new home, which only has one channel, the Monster Channel, which begins releasing monsters into the real world. I guess it's kind of a spin on the virtual games coming alive bullshit, but the Monster Channel sounds pretty good. Like Monster Vision 24/7, how was that not a thing? How did Cartoon Network exist before this? They could have just rotated through everything Charles Band and Roger Corman made, throw some Godzilla in there, and they wouldn't have to repeat anything for like 4 months at a time. Mirror, mirror. Jake thinks it's great that the reflection in his spoon can talk to him, but he soon finds out that the reflection is an evil creature. I might be getting too focused on one detail of this description, but is it just the reflection in the spoon, or is it all reflections? Like, is the reflection in the spoon the same guy as in the mirror, or is it different for every object? If it's just the spoon, this seems like a solvable thing. Destroying something like a giant sarcophagus or like a huge pyramid seems tough for a kid, but a spoon? I think a kid could manage to dispose of a single spoon. Boogie's Back for Blood. When he finds a mysterious old tome, Mike Jacobs accidentally reawakens the evil boogeyman from his four-century slumber. You know what? Right about now, a four-century slumber sounds amazing. You know you're getting old when you think of Rip Van Winkle, and your first take on it is how amazing that nap must have been. Like, what would be really fucked up is that I would sleep for four centuries, I'd be awake for 5 hours, and then be like, guys, this is going to sound crazy, but I think I'm going to go lay down. Lights, camera, die. Mr. Faust runs the Oddly Theater, playing horror films day and night, but it soon turns out he's trapping kids invited as special guests in the movies. So I guess this is kind of a last action hero, or, you know, the first part of it, a reversal of the virtual coming into the real world. You know, if I had to be trapped in a horror movie, I'm trying to think of which ones had the best outcomes for the largest number of people. The Ring would probably be a good choice for most people, but I do a lot of thrifting, and I feel like my chances of coming across that cursed VHS on the thrift store shelves would be kind of high, and I don't know if I'd be able to resist the urge to get it. Camp Crocodile. A summer camp turns out to be more than it seems when a giant crocodile begins targeting the kids. I mean, this is one that we've seen a couple times, and it's barely a horror story. It's more just like, what if a crocodile started shredding through a camp? Which is a great idea, don't get me wrong. I just have a feeling the gore quotient isn't quite high enough to make this really work. Gore quotient. Student exchange. Something weird is going on at Westview Elementary School as James discovers when one of his classmates disappears and a mysterious boy turns up wearing the same pendant as the odd new kid, Marilyn. I mean, sure, Marilyn with the odd pendant. My level of concern on this would depend heavily on which classmates disappeared. If it was like the one friend I usually had in school, it would be a big fucking problem. Or if it was like, you know, the one girl who would take pity and go to homecoming with me, problem. But, you know, just about anyone else and I would probably be mildly interested in the rumors, but ultimately I don't think it'd change my life too much. Like, if these weird body swap people could just be a little more careful, maybe pick one kid from each school in the same town instead of all from the same class, this would probably be a lot smoother. Maybe they need someone like me to talk some sense into them, like a project manager for body swapping. Gimme back my brain. Max encounters a pair of mad scientists who are creating a super robot and want to use his brain as the final piece. At first, he thinks his new robotic body is great, but he soon finds out that no one believes it's him and the scientists are out to bring him under their total control. I always wondered if a robot body would be pretty cool. I mean, you could never smell a flower again, but who gives a shit? I don't smell flowers now. I rarely encounter flowers. Meanwhile, I'd never need to sleep again, and I could crush things with my hands, like I could rocket boost everywhere instead of driving. That's an amazing life. your turn to scream. Michael gets sucked into a mysterious board game and must play his way through assorted dangers to escape. You know, it kind of goes into that same sucked into a video game thing. However, being a board game does add a level of terror for me personally. Like, I fucking hate board games, and this is genuinely kind of a scary thought for me. Like, having to be sucked into Monopoly and playing it for the rest of my life. Okay, Kathleen Dewey, author of Your Turn to Scream, you have my respect. The Curse of the Cheerleaders. The cheerleaders at Lincoln Elementary School have developed the ability to hypnotize people and are using their new powers to take control of others for their sinister purposes. Did elementary school have cheerleaders, and for why? There weren't like any sports teams or anything. Also, I'm deeply uncomfortable with this plot in a way that would be easily remedied by setting it in a college, which would turn this into a very fun romp. Where and scare. Sam and his friends are preparing for a school event and rent Halloween costumes, just some event, and rent Halloween costumes from creepy old Mr. Slytherin, only to find that the costumes are much more than they seem. You know, I've never been a costume rental guy. Call me crazy, I just think it's a weird thing to do. Although maybe if I lived a more party-going lifestyle, I would consider it. I bet rental costumes are pretty great looking, though. They have to be, right? I guess the other good thing is, like, even if they cost a little bit more, you don't have to, like, decide what the hell to do with it after Halloween's over. Lizard people. Michael gets caught in an alternate world where everyone, including himself, is now a lizard person instead of a human and must try to escape. This is uncomfortably close to some weird Jewish stereotype conspiracy theories I've recently become aware of. Although I guess if our character is also a lizard person, there's really not a problem here, right? I mean, if he is in the lizard world as a human, that seems like a problem. But being in the lizard world as a fellow lizard, eh. Circus freaks. Charlie and Jenna decide to dress up as freaks for the school circus play. However, they find themselves in a lot of danger when a real circus comes to town with some real freaks. Oh, finally, a freak show. I feel like the freak show is due for a resurgence. Don't ask me why. I just think it's something that's ready to come up again, like how there's a new vampire fad every decade or so. My dentist is a vampire. Brian's new dentist is Dr. Van, whose office turns out to be a house of horror, home to bloodsuckers of all kinds, including Dr. Van himself. You know what? I would be totally fine with my dentist being a vampire if he did a good job, even if he was killing people and feeding on them. I mean, I feel like if you're a vampire dentist's patient, you're relatively safe, right? If he kills you, there goes his cash cow. And you know, like, I don't know what my dentist is up to in his free time. Like, he could be, who knows? I don't even want to speculate. But like, if I found out he was up to something somewhat unsavory, but that wouldn't affect his work abilities, I'd be like, well, what are you going to do? Saber-toothed tiger. The neighbor of Alan Evans goes missing after Alan sees a trio of menacing-looking cats outside the neighbor's home. Now the cats are after Alan, and he must fight back by taking feline form himself? That one kind of went hard at the end, huh? I have no choice but to become that which is hunting me, which happens to be a cat. I mean, a neighbor going missing, followed by seeing a trio of cats, that seems like a coincidence, doesn't it? Like, if my neighbor went missing and then I saw three cats sitting on the porch, I don't think I'd be like, suspects number one through three right there.
Goosebumps. beware. You're in for a scare.